The definition is to renounce a religious or political belief or principle. In honor of silence, you must apostatize a movie that you love by saying something negative about it.
I'm Katie Rich, and Back to the Future is highly problematic because it involves a white man teaching Chuck Berry his signature song, Johnny Be Good.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven. Fight Club. Could have considered the woman's perspective more.
I'm Matt Patches, and Groundhog Day, it's my favorite movie of all time, but it really falls victim to a very 90s romantic ending.
Oh, boy.
I warned you.
This is why we plan these things
okay,
in advance.
Okay. No,
I
more,
warned you.
To wing them. All right. I'm going to say, maybe a little bit too familiar, a little bit too on brand, but I will cop to the fact that the vine swinging scene in the jungle chase from Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, is grossly CG. And you can tell.
Step on your Spielberg's face. Step on your Spielberg's face.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's awesome. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, episode 160. It's Tuesday, March 28th, and on this day in 1995, what a sad day. Julia Roberts and Lyle Lovett split up.
It's not a sad day because she later got with like a cameraman, and that is a real storybook ending.
And Benjamin Bratt in the middle of there, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, who cares about that? Come on.
What? I mean, everyone cares about Benjamin Bratt.
I care more if she got with Dub Rat, you know?
Before we get into reviews or anything else, explaining our lightning round question, we have another giveaway, which is very exciting. It is of two Blu-rays of Silence, right? We have two to give away?
Yes, we have two copies of Martin Scorsese's little scene 2016 movie, Silence.
So in order to win, we want you to apostatize, which means to say something negative about something that you love. We want you to say something bad about your favorite movie and tweet it at us or put it on our Facebook page or somehow bring it to our attention in a public forum so that other people can see you tweeting at us or Facebooking at us. And maybe we bring in new listeners
but
and then
if
maybe you win a Blu-ray.
If you tweet it, you have to put at FITWR at the end of your tweet.
Or put so the period in front of it.
Yeah, so that you must shame yourself in front of all your friends as well.
Yeah, so if we could come up with negative things to say about Back to the Future and Groundhog Day and Fight Club and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
If I can think of something bad to say about Indiana Jones, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you can think of something bad to say about your own mother, okay?
I think you should all challenge yourselves to say something bad about Carol, and then you'll get David's attention.
Oh, God.
The terror already.
I have plenty of bad things to say about
Carol.
Let's not make
the let's say bad things about Carol contest, please. You have to show me your bona fides of how much you love Carol in the first place, because
that's
the idea of this.
Yes, and that is the fun of it, because I think everyone needs to be able to look at the negative and what they love so that they can argue for the positive. So enter the contest. Is there deadline, Patches? Just sometime soon?
The deadline is going to be the next week. You have until our next episode where we'll announce the winners. I'm going to be strict this time because we've had very lax rules and timing for our contest. In fact, I still have posters. I have posters to send out.
So you have until next Monday night.
Yes, Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, oh, man, it really did dawn on me that I still have to send out these posters from Oscar season to people. And I swear to God I'm going to do it. It's really hard to send posters out.
Well, the nice thing about the Blu-ray is they're mailed by other people. So those are much easier for us to purchase.
Shh, no, that's my effort as well.
So anyway, enter the contest. And in the meantime, David, how about some reviews?
How about them, Katie? Let's see. Let's see what we got.
Always the element of surprise.
You know, you can leave your apostatizations on our iTunes in the form of reviews.
Yeah.
I'd count it.
We'd
count it.
It's possible that we might miss a tweet or Facebook message or skywriting.
It's not possible.
We will almost certainly find your review on iTunes, particularly if it's a positive one. So,
and from America.
Although if you send us a review from abroad, tip us off, and we'll
tweet at us and let us know if you've
tweeted
filed
us
a review,
that you've left us an iTunes review.
Yeah, especially in another country.
It's not that crazy. I don't know what country to check.
Akivas says, I still don't understand why they like the Avenger. Hello! I have been listening to Fighting in the War Room ever since the days of Opkino. I wanted to write a review when I heard about the giveaway contest, but the horrific specter of possibly winning a Mel Gibson film made me wait until the contest was over. Here is a person with integrity, you guys. I'm a fan already. The first episode I ever listened to was the review of the Avengers, a movie I did not particularly like. For some inconceivable reason, everybody on this newfound podcast loved the movie. Obviously, this was some silly podcast with hosts who didn't have good taste, even if their banter was entertaining. However, due to a lack of other podcasts to listen to, I continued listening and realized that, contrary to my original impression, these hosts were no fools. Of course, several years later, I have reason to dislike them because no other movie podcasts are as enjoyable to listen to, and so I have little to choose from. Fighting in the War Room has established a monopoly over my film podcasts with their deep insights, light banter, and genuine love of the topics they discuss, and I curse them for it daily. The hosts are great. My favorite is Katie, because Yay. She seems Aww. The most down-to-earth and can get right to the heart of the matter. Dave Seven and Matt earned my love in the days of Republic City Dispatch. I understand why some people think Matt is conceited, but I disagree. So you're welcome, Matt. And David, well, David is special. I almost always disagree with everything he says, mostly because he's often wrong, but he is consistent and passionate, and I usually don't listen to episodes he's not on. Plus, I could listen to him trash Mel Gibson all day, every day. David, get in touch if you want to start an anti-Mel Gibson podcast. I hope you all keep on fighting in the war room until we're all old, gray, and decrepit. Akiva, some of us already there. Oh, and more JR, please, and thank you. Thank you very much. It was a lovely review.
That was lovely.
And I as much as I love the idea of starting an anti-Mel Gibson podcast, I think I'm already on one. So that is house policy around.
Pretty
can't,
true.
Can't
there.
Prove it wrong. Yeah.
I learned an interesting fact today that Mel Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge made $56 million in China.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that surprising?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for a movie.
You know, action films as opposed to like big VFX heavy things or comic book adaptations. I was reading it today. It said action films in the vein of like Now You See Me movies.
But it's so like very well over there. Sappy American.
I know that Hacksaw Ridge is miles and miles removed from Now You See Me, but I guess I can hop, skip, and a jump to how a movie like
do they end the same way?
They end exactly the same
like,
way with me.
How is he gonna get back? And then he's like
movie theater is how they end.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have time for one more, but I have to remember which we have not read.
Keeping
Dave's
good
not
notes.
Cut this out, by the way.
Nope. This is all in the podcast. It's really good listening. Entertainment.
Can we get the right
for people
from Ipanema?
Yeah. I just sang the host from Ipanema unconsciously, by the way.
The host?
And, oh, okay. Let's see. I believe that we have not read this review. Tyler Cinephiliac says, the best movie podcast. As the title states, this is the best podcast for movies.
You really had me in suspense there.
The hosts are smart and observant, as well as funny and lovable. It's best to have one person you really agree with, so you always have someone arguing or discussing the points you would make if you were there. I'm a fan of good movies, so my one person is obviously David Ehrlich. It's kind of like listening to a good sitcom. Not that the hosts are doing rapid-fire jokes. It's just fun, mostly. In New York City, hosts are in their 30s, and the longer you listen, the more they grow up. A recent episode took place at a host's wedding, and it felt like a season finale to How I Met Your Mother or something. Mostly,
the greatest insult of all time.
No, yeah. That's a compliment. Get over yourself.
Like How I Met Your Mother, Patches' marriage will end with an aborted Greta Gerwig sitcom. That never happens. Mostly, I'm a film obsessive and trying to make it into the independent film world, so listening to the array of opinions by critics and pop culture writers is great for me. But to be honest, I'm just leaving this review because I want the Moonlight Blu-ray that you guys are giving away. Uh-oh. Bad timing. Bad news, Tyler Cinephiliac. I'm a poor college student who just spent all his money on the Criterion before Trilogy set. Anyway.
Good. Wise move.
Yes. Thanks for the great podcast. And if you guys do pick out my review for one of the bundles, and the only one left is Hacksaw Ridge, you can just give it to someone else. Well, maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
But, maybe this guy can win silence on Blu-ray by tweeting.
And there is no... We won't also send you a copy of Hacksaw Ridge if you win silence. So it's a win-win.
We're just going to randomly send people copies of Hacksaw Ridge now.
I will destroy a copy of Hacksaw Ridge in your name.
I emailed today, out of the blue, somebody with no context, the Michelle Williams scene from the end of Manchester by the Sea. It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube? Really?
Yeah, just because I thought that would be a nice midday surprise.
Wow.
So it's sort of the equivalent of sending somebody a Blu-ray of Hacksaw Ridge.
Well, Moonlight is also on Amazon to rent, so I hope that you get to see it.
You are now tuned into the tomb of Jehovah. Play my tunes loud enough to shake the room. What's that hold up? Heard the world is ending soon. I assume that they told you they trying to dinosaur us. So now it's time to go up.
So even though Beauty and the Beast continues to dominate the box office, Power Rangers managed to do really well because I guess there's nothing that millennials, aka our generation, won't get nostalgic about.
You loved Power Rangers growing up, right?
I was fine about Power Rangers. I don't know. I feel like I should cede the floor to Dave as quickly as possible because not only did he see Power Rangers, he wrote a very in-depth article about them for Thrillist.com. I haven't heard of it.
Why are you?
Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I think so.
The Thrillist.
Dave, before we get into your article, which everyone should read, I don't know, was Power Rangers any good?
Oh, it's interesting. Power Rangers isn't bad, and I was greatly surprised by it when I saw it because it attempts to be something other than a Power Rangers movie, which, if you were like me and were mainlining other things in the franchise, assuming that that's what they were going to do. The fact that it takes 90 minutes to get to recognizable Power Rangers tropes was kind of surprising. It starts off with like a joke about, it starts off with a flashback to like alien battles in the future. The meteor that kills the dinosaurs is brought down by Bryan Cranston. Not really important. The characters are introduced to, like, this high school prank, and one of them makes a joke about, like, masturbating a bull, and then there's, like, this car chase sequence.
Do they actually say the word masturbate?
They do not, I'm afraid.
Okay. I keep reading about this scene.
I'm grateful
it's
for
about,
that.
He is lamenting.
They say jack off. Sorry.
A bull's, what he mistakes as an udder, and he mistakes as a cow, and is then wondering why it produced so little milk.
Oh God! Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's that, and then there's a
Power Rangers.
Wait, this kid does not know what semen looks like.
He's a teenager in high school.
Exactly. He should really know what it looks like.
I know. And...
Well, not like cow semen. Like
cow semen doesn't look different, does it? I'm Googling.
Well, just really said that like with a lot of knowledge at first. I didn't know what you knew about cow semen.
I'm looking at cow semen on Google Image. You keep talking.
Okay.
It looks
your ads are
creamy
and
milky.
Oh no! So
maybe this is a common thing that speaks to experiences of American teenagers. Kimberly is embroiled in a sexting scandal between her friend group. Trini the Yellow Ranger is gay, or at least experimenting with her sexuality, and Billy the Blue Ranger is not only black but on the spectrum. So it's a well-represented group of teenagers.
And then there's a hot white kid at the center of it all.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's if you're going to adapt the early 90s Power Rangers group.
Charlie Hunnam look like Marlon Brando.
He's doing a little bit Freddie Prinze Jr. and She's All That, but not well.
That's a lot of credit.
But but not well, but like the same three faces. You know? Anyway, not important. This movie's sort of about... It uses morphing or turning into, their suits as, a metaphor for, the friendship barrier. They all have to get along before it could happen. That means the entire movie basically has to happen. Elizabeth Banks is having fun on the sidelines as Rita Repulsa, the Green Ranger, who is collecting gold to rebuild her giant Goldar to get the Zeo Crystal. Uh-huh.
Wait, she's also a Power Ranger?
No.
Yeah.
You said she was a Green Ranger.
Yes, she is.
Oh.
Yeah, she's the Green Ranger.
Wait, I thought... Okay, I mean, I'm definitely not arguing with your knowledge of Power Rangers here, because this is pretty much my first encounter with anything Power Rangers. But I thought that the Green Power Ranger from my brief Wikipediaing was like another Power Ranger that turned evil. I mean, she used to be the Green Power Ranger, like back in the Protozoic era. Or
that's
whatever.
What he's saying.
Oh, okay, but
yeah, well, she still is in the sense that she has the Green Power Coin, which is what gives her powers and the scepter. But that's why she has
Let
like
me put
Ranger
it this
powers,
way, David. If it's creamy and off-white, then it's semen. It doesn't matter if it came from a bull or a human. If it's a Green Ranger, it's a Green Ranger.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so Elizabeth Banks is having fun. Everybody else is in Project Almanac 2, Power Rangers. And
Well, not incidentally, directed by the same guy. All of us, or maybe Patches' age, Dean Israelite.
You guys are demonstrating a lot of knowledge of Project Almanac.
He's really found his niche with directing shitty, like, high-concept... shiny YA movies, or that like should skew younger or much older, but don't.
It's the interesting thing where it seems like he chases down an interesting idea, but all the ideas aren't connected towards a single vision of something. So like Project Almanac is interesting about like a teen story and a time travel story and a found footage story, but all three of those things together is like overbearing. Power Rangers sort of feels like that towards the end, where it's like they're all in the Zords, which who knows what the they didn't talk about when they got robots or learned how to pilot robots, so like whatever, we're already at one level there. One's like running backwards, the Power Rangers theme plays for like 15 seconds, and then there's like, you know, CGI crazy fest until they have to die metaphorically to build like the major Zord. It's a weird movie. It's not a horrible movie, and as somebody who watched probably a good 55 hours of children's television to prepare to see Power Rangers, I was pleasantly surprised to have something challenging me in front of it, which if you recall when we talk about like remakes and stuff, that's all I'm really asking for is like try something.
Yeah.
And even if you're going to fail miserably, I would rather see like the full-throated attempt. This is a crazy attempt at Power Rangers that doesn't make any sense as a Power Rangers property, but I think it made enough money that you're going to keep going, so we're going to figure out what's up with that.
So, David, if you haven't seen 55 Hours of Power Rangers in the recent future, is there anything for you in this movie?
No, not at all. there are like a few of the young actors here I think are promising and could go on to do better things.
But we'll be in Power Rangers sequels now.
Yeah. Maybe, depending on how like the Chinese box office responds to this, although I would guess rather well. I would imagine that it exceeded expectations here. It certainly blew mine out of the water in terms of its box office performance. Elizabeth Banks is having the time of her life. It was fun for me to learn that the Blue Ranger, whose last name is Cranston, was actually originally named after Bryan Cranston all the way back in 1993. Cranston... voiced a number of the bad guys on the show, and so it's really bringing things full circle that he plays whoever the fuck he plays in this.
The Red Ranger, whatever. Zordon.
Whatever. Zordon. Yeah, how could I forget Zordon? Zordon, I mean, it was like, for the first
Zordon
hours,
is a made-up Warcraft name,
well,
come
for
on.
For the first 2 hours of the movie, the word Zordon is your only hint that you're in a goofy-ass Power Rangers.
Yeah, we need a Zordon-Guldan road trip movie.
Everyone in this movie is from, like, Eastern Europe. That's, like, the defining characteristic of being from outer space. This movie has no idea what audience is trying to serve or what it wants to be. It's embarrassed of the Power Rangers property. And so it really shies away from playing to that only in very, very, very beginning. And
what do you mean
end.
By that? I know that you mentioned that in your
like
review,
the,
but
the
what do you mean?
The whole movie plays like a YA version of the Transformers movies. It borrows so much more from Michael Bay than it does from anything for the Power
but how
Rangers.
But how would it borrow from the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, have it more influenced by man in suit action? Like, I'm not sure how you would take what the original show was doing, since as Dave kind of tore into, it's this mishmash. It's not even like a real show. It has American elements and it has Japanese elements, and they're in total conflict throughout. Now it's 23rd season
is what I've learned. They are, you know, the success of the American show was that they were able to lace stories with American actors.
Yeah, it's like Saved by the Bell, where they go fight giant monsters.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not, and it works not seamlessly, but it doesn't feel like it's cobbled together from all these different things, as interesting as it is that it is. But the movie, I mean, like, if you saw this movie, Patches, without knowing the title, and maybe showed up 5 minutes late, you would not know, other than when they said the words, I guess we're going to be Power Rangers, that it was a Power Rangers movie for 2 hours.
But that's the deconstruction of every, like, kid's property made into a big blockbuster these days, right? It's not, it's all about, I mean, it's the Batman Begins routine. You know, he's not Batman until in the last third, where he's Batman. They're not going to be Power Rangers until they're the last third. If you're taking them seriously as characters, you're not going to stuff this with the blockbuster conceit. You're going to kind of lace actual characters through it with it, whether it's successful or not. I don't see why that approach is a negative. It's a risk.
Well, it's a negative when you're as derivative of other movies as...
Right. The problem is, it's not up to YA snuff. Like, it's not The Maze Runner, which is probably a high bar.
To embrace the identity of your franchise. You know, it's not as if they, like, eventually accept the mantle. Even when they do sort of become Power Rangers, as I mentioned, I think, on our last episode, I mean, they play, like, two bars of the Power Rangers song and then cut it off. And they're like, no. I mean, like, we gave the fans their gruel. Like, now let's go back to being a younger skewing YA Transformers movie. But even in doing that, I mean, it's all the characters as this sometimes feeble, sometimes not attempts at diversity and maturity as they express. That aside, their personalities, the way that they engage with the world, all of them, even the ones who are, even the girl who's struggling with like a sexting scandal, which again is rubbing up really strangely against the YA audience that it's supposedly courting. The way that they speak to one another, it feels like it's for children, but the subject matter feels like it's for adults. Rita Repulsa.
That's life in 2017, man.
Rita Repulsa is genuinely scary.
Kids are so much older.
I mean, she has like jump scare murders. She brutally kills a homeless person for no reason.
There's gold fillings in his teeth.
There are gold fillings in his teeth, right? Like those fucking 8 molecules of gold are going to help her summon Goldar. And it just doesn't really feel like they had someone in mind to watch this movie. So they effectively tried to make it for everyone to this 4-quadrant hit. And it seems, judging by the box office results, that not artistically by any stretch, but commercially they were somewhat successful in doing that. This movie is... my only thing that I know about the Power Rangers is that it's not bland. It's weird and...
Like, no, it is bland.
Very
You're
cheesy.
Wrong.
And no, I mean, it's iconic. And... This whole thing is just bland as can be.
Iconic. The Power Rangers are iconic. Dave, what donut franchise are they going to embrace for the sequel to Power Rangers? Krispy Kreme in the first one.
Probably still Krispy Kreme, because you want Rita Repulsa's laugh line to be that she remembers the important things always under the Krispy Kreme. You can make a whole scene out of that, of her destroying Krispy Kremes.
Oh my God. How did I
trying to find whatever the fuck she's trying to find.
How did I write 1,400 words about this movie without going off on a rant about
1,400 words,
about
oh child.
The Krispy Kremes product placement. How did I not jot that down in my notes?
It's the IHOP of this movie. The IHOP of Man of Steel
it's like way more intense than IHOP. I mean, she literally says... Like, life is the secret of the universe is below this Krispy Kreme donuts. Krispy Kreme, where you get your fucking donuts.
Only someone Krispy with 30 Kreme. Rock training could say that line and get it out there.
True.
I mean, she says it like one of the witches in Hocus Pocus. She knows exactly what she's doing.
Ooh, Elizabeth Banks in a Hocus Pocus remake.
Yeah, that's probably inevitable.
Too white.
I mean, they were all white in the original.
If we're going to just be dream casting Hocus Pocus movies, we could go a little easier.
Very narrow view. Kid.
I don't know. Anyway, Power Rangers.
Power Rangers.
See it, because there's going to be another one.
That's good a reason as any.
I should get a t-shirt that I can wear to screen.
Go see it, because there's going to be another one.
Check out now, you will have no pressure to see the other.
Can we sell that t-shirt in our Fighting in the War Room store that does not exist?
Let's make a Fighting in the War Room store for that t-shirt.
What y'all? Everything got out in the box, though.
Press the button to begin.
Well, speaking of 30 Rock alums who have movies out, David Ehrlich, you saw Boss Baby. And this movie, I heard you did.
The latest film from Hayao Miyazaki.
Reason that I think, I mean, this movie has kind of become a meme, both because it seems ridiculous and it does have kind of the blessing of timing in that Alec Baldwin has been playing Trump on SNL, and Trump in many ways is the boss baby of our nation. Is this movie interesting? Does it live up to any of that? Like, is it interesting at all on any level other than he's a baby who wears a suit?
Nope.
Damn.
The premise of the movie, and it's adapted from a pamphlet-sized children's book, the central metaphor is clever enough, which is that when you introduce a new child into a home, they effectively become the boss baby. The whole house has to adopt to their schedule. Katie, do you know anything about this from your own personal experience?
I have a book called King Baby that I relate to very heavily.
I meant more about the fact that you are currently raising a boss baby of your own.
Oh, yeah. I literally try to work in the morning and he like pulls my laptop off of my lap.
When is Charlie's company going public?
Get me those expense reports. You know?
I know.
So that is a cue metaphor that we just unpacked in about 13 seconds. So imagine that for 95 minutes. I will say that the director, whose name I'm not going to bother looking up.
Tom McGrath.
Nope.
Okay.
He directed the Madagascar movies. I remember that from writing up this movie, a review that I wrote a few weeks ago. This is that ugly, generic DreamWorks CG. I mean, it's repulsive to look at. That being said, he really, there's a lot of really clever ways in which it skitters around. Because a lot of the movie takes place in the kids, like the older child's overactive imagination. We see the story through his eyes. He, as all kids do, has this very vivid inner life that exists entirely within his house.
And, wait.
Yeah.
So does the baby actually talk, or is it entirely in the metaphor?
This is complex.
And so
it's the inception of Boss Baby movies.
The way that the movie navigates between those imaginations and cuts between, or puts the filter on and then removes it, what's happening in reality and what's happening in this kid's imagination is often visually clever. And that's more or less the best thing you can say about this movie. There are some really interesting and mildly amusing contrasts between his little baby brother having like a little baby play date with all the babies from the neighborhood. And then through his eyes, it's like a board meeting. And there's even like an action sequence. Something that's interesting about the movie is that it very, very, very subtly takes place like 25 years ago. You know this because it's narrated, much like The Great Gatsby, by an adult, Tobey Maguire. And he is narrating. He is the adult version of not the baby, but the older kid. And he is talking about this from the perspective of 2017. And really the only things that give that away are the fact that nobody has cell phones, which is...
Even the boss baby? He has so many deals to make.
I believe the boss baby does not have a cell phone.
He could have a big cell phone 25 years
remember.
Ago.
It could be even longer.
He doesn't have
that.
A big, funny
but
cell phone? That's
that,
a great
like,
joke.
One of my notes as I was going along was, like, why are all these kids' references, and there are not many of them, to, like, there's this visually exciting chase on the lawn of their house where they use sound effects from the $6 million man. And I was just like, what? Like, what, like, 7-year-old kid is in our modern day and age is thinking, because it's again all supposed to be filtered through his imagination of the $6 million man. And then the Elvis references start taking hold and so on. And like you said,
wait, if this movie is set 25 years ago and it's a 7-year-old, that means he's our age. And I don't make $6 million man references.
I am pulling the number 25 years ago.
Fair enough.
The more bionic woman.
It is sometime in the indeterminate past. But that is an interesting choice. And I think If I were being as generous as humanly possible, had a few glasses of wine in the 30% tipping category for this evening, I would say that it is some sort of contrived commentary on how we, like, technology of the same age and the way that we allow kids to interact with the world is dulling their imaginations. Not a particularly novel argument, but I think it's safer. This could have been a great, like, Pixar short, like a really sort of overeager one, but it could have worked as a Pixar short. As a 95-minute movie, it drove me insane.
Does Alec Baldwin, wait, do we get to see the older version of Boss Baby in the future?
That would be telling. But I had no comments. Anonymous sources say that you might.
spoilers for Boss Baby.
No, I mean, sure, it doesn't hurt the film that we have this Alec Baldwin, Donald. I mean, you don't even really need the Alec Baldwin component to make the connection to Donald Trump, you know. It's not like fascistic garbage human sewer Nazi baby, you know, it's not like incompetent fucking said that he was going to be the great closer, the great negotiator, but can't even get the, don't even get me started about the fucking healthcare bill. It's not that.
It's over, David.
Nobody could get anything started about that healthcare bill.
Sing. Anyway, don't see Boss Baby. Come on. Let's be serious. Go see Personal Shopper.
See Power Rangers.
Yeah.
All my life, me ever have my gun, so me have to move sharp like me knife. All my life, me pray that when me get wealthy, I'm a army
wife. Well, over the weekend, I finally caught a couple episodes of Riverdale, which I thought of throughout, which I believe is David's term as Hot Archie Who Fucks. Are you the one who came up with that, David?
I do not believe that I coined Hot Archie Who Fucks, but that is how I refer to the show in all circumstances now.
Which you very well should. I have been hearing about the show for a while, starting at TCA over the summer when Joanna Robinson went and to a panel about it and kind of learned. She compared it to Twin Peaks because those are two shows that were being promoted at the time. And I kind of thought that was insane when I heard it. But you watch the show and it very much has a Twin Peaks vibe. It is an adaptation of Archie Comics, which I knew the characters from and basically nothing else. It's one of those pop culture things that has existed, but I've never paid a lot of attention
to. You never read Archie Comics as a kid?
I never read comics.
That was my vacation reading.
In contact with an Archie comic.
Really?
I watched this with my husband Michael, who at some point was like, wait, how do you know who these characters are? How do you know the dynamic between Betty and Veronica? And I was like, wait, did you not know that Archie comics existed? He did not know that Archie comics
existed. So you're not that bad.
I'm not saying they're bad.
Super sweet teenage comics or tween comics. This is what I read on my vacations. They're just nice.
Yeah.
For nice boys like me.
Well, on Riverdale... it's set in this small town called Riverdale, where it's about all these high school students and characters who are familiar from the comics or from pop culture, like Archie and Jughead and Betty and Veronica. But there's a murder at the beginning of the show, and then it kind of follows that, and then the various dynamics between these characters who, I mean, my teen show references are fairly outdated because there's a lot of CW teen shows I'm not watching, but there's a lot of Gossip Girl vibes to it, or The OC, where they're making a lot of pop culture references, and they're all kind of older than their years, and then there's drama among the parents. But there's a murder mystery that kind of keeps it all going. And every episode that I've watched, I've only seen three. There's been, I think we said seven. But they all end with a cliffhanger. So there's kind of a lot being thrown at the wall to get you on board. It's like a twist on Archie, and it's murder, and it's high school, and it's teens looking good. And
That's the theme for this episode. Well, there's a lot being thrown at the wall.
And I don't necessarily know why it works, but I've really enjoyed it. And all of a sudden, in like a span of 2 weeks, it felt like everyone I knew was trying to get me to watch Riverdale.
This is your moment to figure out why it works.
Well, I think it works for the same reason that Power Rangers doesn't, which is because it knows that it wants to be a... the Archie property is sort of incidental as far as I'm concerned, as someone who didn't really care about Archie or was familiar with it. But it knows that it wants to be a YA Twin Peaks, and what perfect timing. And it commits to that wholesale with a dash of Gossip Girl thrown in, although I guess that's part and parcel of the YA bit. And it doesn't have to be coy about that or try to satisfy other masters. And so it nails the tone from the very beginning, and seven episodes in.
I think it's flatlined a bit.
Well, I think it'd be overstating the case to say that I really care about what happens on the show, but I enjoy watching it.
That's the weird part about Riverdale, that it's kind of like hinged on this mystery, and it's rather exciting in the beginning because how are these kids all entangled in a murder in their hometown? It's just wild, even though day-to-day operations are being teenagers and getting caught in romantic drama and after-school activity drama and school newspaper drama, and they're also solving this murder. And balancing, jumping back between those tones is really fun. But seven episodes in, it's kind of like lost its way in that way. They're always talking about the murder, and it's just simmered down. It's kind of just becoming just another teen show, which is actually, it's fine. It's totally watchable. All the actors except the kid who plays Archie, I think, are really good, especially Betty and Veronica, who are just, they have so much life to them, and they're dimensional, and they have motivations, and they're not just, you know, out to get boys, but
they're friends.
They have sexuality.
Like an interesting twist.
Yeah.
Their friendship is fun to watch.
I find them incredibly watchable, and then the guys are just sacks of lifeless
Lily
meat.
Who plays Betty, I think, is phenomenal, and
yeah,
she was
too.
Great in last year's Miss Stevens, which is also stars Timothy Chalamet, who.
It's going to blow our all minds
everywhere
later this year.
After Call Me By Your Name. So you may want to do yourself a favor and get ahead of the conversation by catching up with that.
Katie, you were saying, like, why is a show good? Why does it work? Compare it to the OC season one, which is just this
phenomenal terrific
stretch of episodes. It feels like three seasons in a single one, and I can't say that the second or third seasons matched it even close. But like, why does the OC season one work so well, since you've had time to stew on that?
I don't think Riverdale has a burning through plot problem. I think they're doing a really good job of kind of laying things out and getting the characters in place. And I mean, and again, I haven't watched the full all the episodes that have aired yet.
It's plotted about as densely as Twin Peaks was, which is not, you know, I'm not going to compare it qualitatively, but in terms of the various threads
there are still twists and clues every episode. You know, Betty has her sister who is in an insane asylum or something. They have to go find her. That's another.
That's exactly how Twin Peaks is.
Yeah, and Twin Peaks drew on this giant cast of characters to keep their story going, and eventually became very unwieldy on Twin Peaks, and you can see Riverdale kind of opening that up. Like, I really liked what I've seen with Josie and the Pussycats, and there seems like a lot of story there that, like, it's not automatically getting into.
When are they going to sing I'm a Punk Rock Prom Queen?
I mean, any minute now, probably. I mean, I think Twin Peaks is definitely had more, like, surrealness to it. I think calling Twin Peaks real is kind of overstated because it was also really funny and very soap opera-y, but I don't. Riverdale is very stylized, but I don't think it's nearly as stylized as Twin Peaks, but it's definitely doing that, like, noir, you know, Jughead is the narrator kind of talking about things from in the future. It's got a vibe to it in a way that, like, the OC had a vibe, but it was kind of much more straightforward. Has just a little bit of a twist.
But is that vibe authentic?
You know what this is missing is Angelo Badalamenti.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been rewatching Twin Peaks.
I was about to say, you've clearly been rewatching Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and like that 80% of the legwork of that show, I don't know if I'm overstating the case, is to the four themes that repeat incessantly.
He puts you into a trance. That music creates something that's outside of the show. It just, like, it's surrounding you like a blanket, and Riverdale has nothing like that.
Of here comes Audrey looking all vampy to, like, something like
okay. We're gonna have a Twin Peaks episode at some point.
Anyway, where's my Riverdale theme is what I'm saying.
Good point.
Well, where's any of the real... I think that's what it's missing. There's like a weird faux craft to Riverdale. And the guy who shot the pilot is the guy who directed Age of Adeline, which kind of has the same problem.
Yeah.
Like, it's emulating without owning. And it doesn't feel like real genre, and it doesn't feel like it's going to take the leap into something truly weird or even truly soap opera-y. Like, I think that's what the OC really excelled at. I mean, it might be more realistic, and it might just be more what happens in town today and what happens tomorrow. But it's like true.
Did you know that Allison Anders directed the seventh episode?
Who?
Allison Anders of Border Radio and Gas Food Lodging fame, a pivotal figure in American independent cinema.
I mean,
I did not know that.
A lot of independent directors get good jobs on television. All right, so do you? So you think Riverdale should be more of a soap opera? Because I like, you know, after having watched Empire and gotten really bored, I like that it's not just flying through plot lines.
No, it's. I wanted it to be more about the central mystery without being too plotty about it, right? I just want more intrigue. There's an episode, Katie, I don't know if you've gotten to this, but that they the girls get caught up in kind of a sexting scandal. They're going to be, they're shamed by some of the boys.
Oh, yeah,
told
yeah,
you
yeah.
It was like that's... Power Rangers.
And that's just like, that goes crazy. And Betty flips on this psychosis that she's harboring because of her sister and everything that's going on. And they like trap him in the hot tub at someone's house. And she's like in dominatrix outfit. And it's just wild. And I'm not saying it needs to like escalate like that every episode, but that just feels like Riverdale unhinged. And I wish I could see that more, because I certainly don't get it from Archie and his relationship with his teacher or any of that garbage plotline. Like, that feels bad CW indulgent to me. And it seems to be combating its CW-ness. I feel bad saying that, because there's a lot of good shows on CW at this point. Maybe what I really mean is like WB-ness. Which is an older reference,
like,
I guess.
Like One Tree Hill.
So you want more teenage girls in dominant style?
That's actually not what I'm saying.
A very nuanced argument from Matt Patch.
Well, let me give another. I'll give you another thing on the same point. Another point would be that, you know, later in the show, Betty and Jughead, played by one half of the twin group, Cole and Dylan Sprouse from Big Daddy.
Quick, which one was it? Which one is it?
It's Cole Sprouse.
Okay.
I know my shit. So Jughead and Betty, they go and investigate the murder. And there's this one episode where they're tracking down like the local Boy Scout, and it feels so absurd because it's almost like a Wes Anderson-y version. It's like Moonlight Kingdom or Moonrise Kingdom or something. Moonlight Kingdom. I want to see that movie too.
I'd watch that.
And it's just like that's an escalation too. That doesn't involve lingerie or any. Teenage girl sexuality, but that's pushing the envelope again, but using the plot, not becoming plot heavy or, you know, riding this mystery to the end, but it's still motivating their actions, taking them to new places around this crazy town full of, you know what the real problem is? The parents aren't fun. The parents on Riverdale suck, and that's why the OC was great. I don't care about Luke Perry.
The last Twin Peaks connection here is that Betty's mom is played
by Majin Amick. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, I mean, I was probably going to mispronounce it.
Is she in the new one?
Yeah, in the new Twin Peaks. Yeah, Shelley. Yeah. I agree that the show could use the Sandy Cohen. Maybe Luke Perry can really emerge like that. But I think one of the part of the twistiness that I'm enjoying in it is the way that it's like taking this very white bread story and the idea of like a small town soda shop and kind of bringing modern sensibilities to it. Like that episode with the girls kind of getting revenge on slut shaming, where, you know, you again have the twist of Betty and Veronica teaming up and not just fighting over Archie. You also get Archie working with Josie and the Pussycats and wanting to write songs for them. And Josie, the leader of the group, is like, you can't write songs for me, a white man, and that I, a black woman, will sing. You can't understand my experience. And he's like, yeah, okay, I get it. Like, it's very woke, and it's very interesting. And like, I don't know, it feels authentic. It doesn't feel as preachy as I think it might have. And maybe to teenagers watching this, like, it feels automatic, but it felt very refreshing to me coming within the context of something as familiar and traditionally white as Archie.
Yeah.
As a bonus, all of the episode titles are named after classic films.
Oh, are
they? River's Edge, A Touch of Evil, Body Double, The Last Picture Show, Heart of Darkness, Faster, Pussycats, Kill Kill.
Wow.
I guess they went plural there. And the seventh episode, directed by Allison Anders, was called In a Lonely Place.
Episode 8 is The Outsiders, and 9 is La Grande Delusion.
Oh, whoa, they're getting fancy in French with these. That's exciting.
Well, Katie, one of the
and
things
10 is going to be Power Rangers.
Yeah, classic films.
Boss
Katie, on the same note, I was going to say that one of my favorite characters on the show is Kevin, the openly gay student who is also from the comics.
The character in the comics who got gay married? Isn't that a whole thing?
I guess he was. I'm trying to think of when in the comics he came out, but I was going to say it wasn't too long ago, but it was honestly probably like 7 to 10 years ago, and I have no sense of time anymore. But he has an interesting plotline where he's just trying to find a gay guy to hook up with in this town, and there's not enough openly gay people, and he does, and it's such a glorious moment for him coming alive. And then you have the interesting contrast of his dad being the sheriff, which, you know, you have a certain idea of how a sheriff on a genre-y TV show like this might act, and their scenes feel really authentic too. I love that relationship. He's the only good parent. The sheriff.
Mm. Yeah, but people. We also, let's not forget, for with a show that has Madchen, Amick, or I've never said her name out loud, so.
Madchen is at least how you say Madchen. The German word. It means little girl.
Okay. And that's good to know. And
it means daddy.
Madchen, Amick. And Luke Perry, you also have Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah, that was that blew my mind.
As like a barely recognizable biker.
I had to look that up, yes.
He wants to break good, but will he be able to? I don't know. Stay tuned.
Oh my God.
Well, he's not just a biker. He plays Jughead's dad. He's old now.
Slash, oh, they did reveal that he's also Jughead. I mean, I don't know if it was like a secret, but.
What do you mean? There's an episode. There's like.
He is Jughead's dad.
Multiple episode arc about that.
Sorry, I haven't seen the show in like 3 weeks because they've been on hiatus, and so. That's long enough for all of it to reset my brain.
That
all
is
I remember
true.
Is Cole Sprouse's little Jughead hat.
Yep.
I mean, I guess to wrap this up, I wonder why Riverdale seems to be a phenomenon that's just... the internet seems so obsessed with it as if it's the second coming of a certain type of show. And this is when I enjoy Riverdale quite a bit, but I'm hesitant to kind of just shower it with praise as if this is... revelatory.
Have people been showering
it
with praise, or are they just sort of like laughing along at hot Archie who fucks and like the fun of seeing this I don't want to say the words guilty pleasure, but
I don't think it's like a guilty pleasure. I think it's the way that I've seen praise isn't ironic. It's like, this is a really fun, the characters are great, and you know, my wife and her friends are really into the show and like following people on Instagram and stuff just to see like they're into the show and they want to know the mystery, and people have like theories about the murder and that kind of stuff. That's hooking people.
I'm into it. I don't know. Like, I think there's definitely a middle ground between like NCIS and Big Little Lies, where there's a TV show that is thinner than maybe some True. Of the best of TV can be, but is enjoyable and engaging on a week to week basis. I think Riverdale fills that territory.
It's not a guilty pleasure. It is comfort viewing.
Or it's just, I don't know. It's just good, but not. No, I don't want to say it's art. Everything is art.
Power Rangers.
It's definitely art. It's definitely art. No, it's a show. We don't have many shows that aren't totally serialized that you can come back to the world and just hang out with characters. The plot, the mystery aspect keeps every episode tied back. And for people who are totally dedicated, there's something. But like, since David hasn't thought about Riverdale in almost a month, when he comes back to this world, it's just going to be like seeing the gang again. That's what was great about the comics, too.
I really don't buy that argument at all. I mean, yeah, I have a terrible memory and watch the show without one eye, but I'm going to need to catch up pretty closely on what's happening, because none of these episodes stand alone. They're all deeply entwined in this one ever-expanding mystery. And if you lose any of the threads, you're sort of screwed. So I really don't see it as a hangout.
Really? I think they have the connectivity of like a Nickelodeon show. You referenced Alex Mack last week, and that's about the weight of the real story going on here. I mean, each episode gives these guys more backstory and you know, more bringing more to the table.
I still don't think about GC-161 on a daily basis and what the chemical
Remember that streak where she was burping bubbles?
Get some.
Why did she burp bubbles? That was weird.
Because that seems fun as a kid, probably.
Oh, everything.
Let's talk more about Alex Mack.
I drank so much Capri Sun in hopes of turning into Alex Mack. Anyway.
So, Dave, you haven't watched Riverdale at all?
I watched one episode, but I missed the OC train, but was around for 100% of Gossip Girl, like, day and date of air. So I feel like... I did that, and I used to, you know, do it in New York with our mutual friend Rachel Walker, and then we were down at South by Southwest. She's like, "Are you a fan of Riverdale?" I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm going to get on this boat yet, and if I am going to get on it, I'm going to get on it when it's binge-worthy.
But it's based on a comic.
And she said, "Thanks, Patches. I can't be a dimensional person." Anyway, she said, I was only asking because there's like a CW party, but if you haven't seen Riverdale, I'm not going to take you. And I was like, shit.
Wow, harsh.
So I should have lied.
Harsh, but fair.
But then I saw Christy Puchko yell at Archie in the street late at night.
What did she yell?
The guy who plays Archie. Archie!
Oh, she didn't like scold
just
him.
To see if he'd turn around. He didn't turn around.
Does he have red hair as he walks around? Or has he gone back to his actual hair color?
I think he's back to his actual hair color. I didn't know who I was looking for at, but I was present for the moment.
Why are there so many redheads on the show?
Because it stands out against the green. Green and orange.
I guess that's
it's a color thing. But
just waiting for him to be related to those twins.
Why does he suck so much? That's what's confusing. I think Riverdale would be such a better show if he wasn't a sad sack who loved music and wanted to play, you know, like John Mayer Muzak on stage for a living. Ugh, what an awful person.
Well, Riverdale, when does it come back?
It comes back on the 30th. So that's this Friday.
God, oh my, I got to watch the episodes on the CW app before they get deleted. Yeah, some of them are on CW app, but not the whole season. So if you want to catch up, you have to rent them on iTunes like I did.
We should mention one thing. If you're not hooked on Riverdale and this whole, like, Twin Peaks-ish murder mystery, apparently the creators have been talking about how each season is going to be a different genre. And
what?
There's speculation that, like in the Archie comics, they did a run where Riverdale was infested with zombies.
Fuck. They're going to do After Death?
Yeah. Oh,
fuck them. Fuck this
it
show.
It could have a zombie season.
This is like every time Supergirl is like, or we're going to spin off Game of Thrones. Fuck
you. My wife, Michelle, had a really insightful observation, which was they could easily bring in Sabrina in season 2 and add magic to the world, and then in season 3 do zombies. That would be very smart.
I would bail on this show.
Really?
So hard.
If they brought Sabrina back, what's wrong with you?
I don't know. I have fucking good taste and want to not see my precious Riverdale sullied with bullshit.
I'm here for magic.
Sullied with bullshit? What is magic?
It's not the contract. I would happily watch a Sabrina spinoff that is in this vein and told with this tone. But the contract that I signed... when I got into the show, did not allow for magic. And it doesn't even allow, it's not the kind of show that even allows for the possibility of magic, where it's like a fun surprise, like an Inglourious Bastards, we killed Hitler sort of gambit.
I think it's an obvious extension.
I will bet anyone on this podcast.
Really? I think if you can do like Cruel Intentions and The Craft have the same tone.
One-off.
Wait, Dave, are you betting that it will happen?
No, I was just going to say, I bet anybody on this podcast that regardless of what the show does, David hates it in season 2.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, well, I hope not, but...
I mean, no, I hope not either. I would love for you to...
episodes into season 1, which I believe is running 13, so yes. The odds are pretty good that unless things go wildly off the rails, I will at least be checking in for season 2. So, we will see.
Well, I mean, if this turns out, if it, like, ends a season and ends up not being, like, some... able to elevate slightly out of YA soap, like just a little bit of elevation is all I'm looking for. I just don't want to sink like 22 episodes of my life into something and have it, you know, be Dan was the gossip girl.
I just hope by the end of the run that they can adapt the Archie versus Predator comics where the Predator comes in. That is real. They should do that. What is they're not
Dave,
making Predator movies,
that?
Are they? Oh, wait, they are.
Arch American Horror Story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the closer this cleaves to American Horror Story, the sooner I will be checking out.
Well, stay tuned for what happens for season 2 of Riverdale and place your bets with us on Twitter on what you think is going to happen. And I don't know, maybe you'll rent a Blu-ray. Maybe we'll figure out some way to turn that into a contest.
We got the power to be loving each other no matter what happens. We got the power to do that.
That does it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I'm Matt Patches. I'm the executive entertainment editor of Thrillist.com. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches. We have a website, fightinginthewarm.com, where you can listen to the episodes, you can share the episodes, you can comment. Someone left a really long comment 2 weeks ago, I think, that Dave sent me a personal email, and it was just railing against me for talking about how Netflix doesn't have any good movies anymore. Hey.
Oh, if you direct it to somebody that isn't me, I will make sure they get it. I read all of them.
I go to the site and read them, too. I saw it, but I also got it double slapped. But here's the thing.
Yeah, that's right. Netflix, I wanted to make sure.
Netflix doesn't have Batman to get movies anymore. Fightinginthewarren.com.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior film critic for IndieWire. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich. You can find me on IndieWire at IndieWire. And you can find all of us together on the internet, on the Facebook, at Fighting the Warren.
I'm Dave Gonzalez.
Just pausing for emphasis. Are we done?
Do you know, like, half the time I cut those pauses out just, like, automatically thinking it's, like, a mistake or a lag?
Listen.
I apologize. I didn't realize it was been a long-running bit.
There are no... Cloud Atlas voice here. There are no mistakes.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find the rest of our podcast work at fightinginthewarroom.com, like Matt Patches said. And you can find my deep dive into Power Rangers at Thrillist.com's entertainment section, where you could, geek out on Super Sentai with me.
I'm Katie Rich. You can find me at VanityFair.com and on the Little Gold Men podcast, just a free shout out. And I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, KATEYRICH. And we're all on Twitter at FITWR, where I cannot wait to hear you guys railing on your favorite movies as part of our contest. Can you phrase it better for me, Dave? What was our lightning round question?
In honor of silence, you must apostatize a movie that you love by saying something negative about it.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.